Good morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show any time of day or night thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later in the program, we're going to be speaking with Beth Velasquez of the AARP, Jackie M. of the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum. Right now, I'd like to welcome John Crago. He is organizer of the exhibition, which is at El Museo Cultural, Cuba, Art and Soul, and that goes through the end of August. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
It's great to have you.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yours is an interesting story. You are not by profession an artist or art curator. How did you find yourself in Cuba and organizing an art exhibition?
Well, I got a license to travel to Cuba to sell agricultural products 2 years ago. I do have a strong background myself, personally making art, but I've never been in the business of art. And I found out while traveling back and forth to sell agricultural products that it was legal to bring art back to the United States. It's the only thing that is legal to bring back here is art and intellectual property. So I did some research and found out that there are only a handful of people doing it, and so decided to get into cultural exchange and bringing the art back. And so we opened this show here as our first major exhibition towards having a full-blown Cuban, week-long Cuban festival that embraces all of the arts in 2009. With the goal of getting the Cuban artists here and helping to open up cultural exchange with Cuba.
So you are an artist. Are you a painter?
No, I haven't ever painted. I've blown glass, made stained glass windows, done sculpture, film, documentary work. I had a marble and granite stone business, so I've done some sculpture and stone and fountains and things like that, but never painting.
Very interesting. And so you were there in Cuba selling agricultural products. How did you start meeting artists? Were you in Havana? Were you in other parts of the country?
Primarily in Havana, almost exclusively, because that's where Alanport, the buying agency for all the agricultural products, is. And I became friends with a ship captain who is now retired, who is bilingual, who would function as translator and driver, because transportation down there is limited. And he is best friends and childhood friends with one of the most famous Cuban painters, who we have a few of his works in the show featured, Agudo Alonso. And so he said, oh, I want you to meet my friend Agudo. He's a great painter. He's been all over the world. He's in museums, and you'll like him a lot. And so we went over and met Agudo and got along very well, and then it just grew kind of organically from there, from one artist to another. And so that's how it started anyway, was with Agudo.
That's it. And so you have some of the real senior painters of the country of Cuba in this exhibition, and some of the best known and most respected.
Yes, there's actually, it's kind of two exhibitions in one. In the front gallery at Museo is all living masters, and there's about 10 or 11 artists in the front, and yes, they're all in their 60s or 70s primarily. They've been painting their whole lives. They're in museums and collections all over the world. They show all over the world. They have incredible curriculums. And so, yes, they're in the front, the masters, and in the back are emerging artists. There's about 20 younger, up-and-coming painters that are represented in the back.
When you look at the work as a whole, are there any themes in terms of what they're painting or how they're painting that you've seen in the exhibition?
Well, ideas, yes, there are common themes. You see a lot of boats representing travel or desire to get to a better place. You see, like in Agudo's work, there's a lot of, kind of subliminal landscapes that have to do with ideas being repressed, but you can't hold an idea back. So you see a lot of horizontal lines, but then the ideas coming forth and breaking through the barriers that they can't be repressed. But there's a lot of thematic representations of waiting, of ideas needing to be expressed and wanting things to be better, but they can't directly speak to that with their art, so they have to hide those messages within the art. For instance, a watermelon can represent the country with palm trees growing out of it, but two wheels on it and, you know, it's broken. It can't function either as a watermelon or as a means of transportation. So there are lots of messages in there, but they're more subdued than in most of the American art because they can't directly speak to that.
They can't directly speak to it, but these interpretations that you're making, I mean, a boat could represent freedom, it could represent many things. Did they tell you that? Did you have these discussions? I mean, I know you can't necessarily always have them publicly, but did you have discussions privately about what the symbols meant?
Yes. I ask them a lot about messages in their art. There's another painter, an emerging artist, who uses fish. And I said, and that's his logo is fish. And I said, all right, so what does the fish mean to you? And he said, well, the same thing. He said, the fish means freedom because a fish knows no boundaries. It can go, it can travel or swim anywhere it wants to. You know, there's no countries or visas or anything like that. So, yeah, I ask the artists a lot of personal questions about the images in their art. And it's very interesting in their imagery in that in Cuba, the masters all remember the days before Castro. And there's a very interesting dividing line between the younger generations and the older generations in that way, because the older generations appreciate and love Fidel because they know what life was like before Fidel and the conditions that made the revolution possible.
And the conditions before Fidel were absolutely horrible, and people getting massacred and prejudice, and especially prejudice against the Afro-Cubans and so on.
Yes, absolutely. And totally corrupt. They didn't own their own country. Everybody else in the world owned it. And although there was more money around, there were more goods around, they were far less free in many ways than they are now.
And then the younger people don't have that memory, and what's their attitude like?
They're just waiting for the beard to die so that things can change. Everybody's waiting for things to change.
We're talking to John Crago. The exhibition is at El Museo Cultural. It's called Cuba, Art and Soul. It runs through the end of August. It's a funny paradox with that, and I've noticed it often because I've gone to Cuba to study and work and so on. And on some very deep level, they are a free people, but they have less freedom of speech than we do.
There are many paradoxes in that way in Cuba. Yes, they are internally free. There's a degree of family that's inherent in all Latin cultures that is very apparent there, but also as a people, they are extremely united through hard times, beliefs, but they are very free. I mean, they don't have the freedoms that we do, a freedom of speech. They can't travel freely like we can. They don't have the opportunity to advance themselves personally like in a free enterprise system like we do. But because of all that, it's forced them to become internally more free in many ways, in their self-expression and just in their outlook.
It's very interesting. One of the things that I find very sad is that there is so little communication between Cubans and Americans, and you have done and are continuing to do something about that. Tell us about the event tomorrow night.
Well, this is the second live video link that we will have had. The first one was at the first grand opening of the exhibition a little over a month ago. And as far as I know, nobody has ever done that in the realm of art and cultural exchange with Cuba.
Now, video link means people are sitting in El Museo Cultural in front of a screen with speakers and microphones and cameras pointed at them, and the same thing is happening in Cuba, in Havana, and you're actually having a conversation back and forth.
Yes, and it's not a satellite link. There's a slight delay, just like all TV, but yes, it's a live, real-time link, and so people that will come to the opening can ask a question of the artists, and the artist can answer. But if just as a word of kind of caution or understanding, just know that the Cubans can't speak totally freely. So if you do come, tailor your questions with a little caution for them, for their sake, just because I want this to continue, and we don't want to alienate the cultural ministry, because this is officially sponsored by the cultural ministry in Cuba, which is one of the reasons that I can achieve this.
So this is tomorrow night, Friday night at 6 o'clock at El Museo Cultural. Anybody can come here from Santa Fe and just show up and become part of this event?
Yes, I think what I'm going to do is basically have the people that want to ask a question put names in a hat, and then we'll draw names out of the hat, and everybody can ask for one question, and then we'll just go until the time is up.
And so it'll be about an hour of conversation?
An hour to an hour and a half. There's still a couple of logistics on that I'm waiting to hear back from the Cubans today is exactly as far as the time frame that we can, but yes, we will have it for a minimum of 1 hour.
And that's tomorrow night at El Museo. How did it go the first time that you did this?
The first opening was tremendously successful. We had gotten all of the equipment hooked up, and we were looking for the number, because it's through a phone line, to call Cuba, and all the lines were open, the sound was on, the TV was on, everything was ready, and then all of a sudden Cuba pops up on the screen. They had called us and said, hello, this is Cuba, are you there? But it went wonderfully. There was all these master artists in Cuba that I knew sitting there, and so people asked questions. We had good support here. Stuart Ashman showed up, not in his official position, but just as support. And I thought it went very well. Everybody on both sides that I talked to was very pleased with it. All the Cubans, the cultural ministry down there, and all the individuals and people here, everybody thought it went really well, and it was groundbreaking.
Now, so once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at El Museo Cultural on Paseo de Peralta. What are your plans with continuing this kind of work?
Well, I'm hoping after this show comes down here to move it to Los Angeles, but part of the festival idea for in 2009 is I'm starting, now that I have my official letter of support from the cultural ministry in Cuba for the festival, I'm going to be organizing nationally all the different individuals and small factions that are working towards cultural exchange, normalizing cultural exchange and art exchange with Cuba, which there are quite a few people. But they need to be coordinated and organized to have some effect. I mean, instead of a shotgun approach, we need more of a bullet approach. And so that's what I'm starting now. And so for the next couple of years, also through the agricultural aspect, which is my background in the import-export, I'm going to be contacting the states that are doing a lot of business with Cuba and getting support from them, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Georgia, Alabama. I mean, there's a lot of states that are making a lot of money off of doing trade with Cuba, and they aren't doing anything in the realm of cultural exchange. But now, I mean, since the embargo got amended, there's been over $2 billion in money that's flowed back and forth for agricultural products to Cuba.
What kind of products are people selling to Cuba?
All kinds of agricultural products.
What are you involved with?
Personally, I went, for instance, I went down with a trade mission from New Mexico a year ago in August, and I represented three of the five cheese factories that are located in New Mexico. Dairy is the biggest single cash product of New Mexico. I've also tried to sell them peanuts, beans, peas, beef. The product that I'm trying to sell is power poles, treated power poles, which is kind of a stretch, but it's an agricultural product.
Because it comes from trees.
Comes from a tree, so, yeah.
Now, Cuba is allowed to buy our stuff. Are we then in turn allowed to buy any of theirs?
The only thing that's legal to bring into this country from Cuba is art, books, music, intellectual property. That's it. Nothing else.
John Crago, it's just about time to go. We look forward to keeping up with this very interesting project. Anything else you want to add for our listeners before we close?
Just come see the work. The quality of the work is phenomenal. The people are very real people, the artists, and I think you'll find the work interesting and the live video link even more so. So
people can go see the work for a while. El Museo Cultural is going to be open tomorrow all day, and then especially before the video link at 6 o'clock.
Yes, we'll be down there tomorrow all day, and the work will be up all month, and almost everything there is for sale, so if you see anything you like,
there we
just
have
ask.
It. John Crego is organizer of the exhibition Cuban Art and Soul at El Museo Cultural through the end of August and tomorrow night live video feed. Thanks so much for being on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. I appreciate it very much.
We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be talking about the AARP. Stay tuned to KSFR. And I'd like now to welcome Beth Velasquez. She is with the AARP, American Association of Retired People.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Now, we think of the AARP as people who are retired, that is over 65, or is that not true? Who makes up the constituency of the AARP?
Well, actually, we serve people who are over 50, and actually we've kind of dropped being referred to as the American Association of Retired People because over 43% of our membership now is not retired.
Uh-huh.
So we just go by the acronym now.
So it's really kind of it doesn't actually stand for anything anymore.
Exactly. But, our kind of membership, the demographics of our membership is really becoming more and more diverse.
Interesting. So why are people who are still working and 52 years old or whatever even joining in the first place?
It's there's a variety of factors because once you hit 50, of course, usually we find you and send you an application in the mail.
You find us?
And
that sounds a little sinister.
No, not at all. I mean, there's our database is pretty extensive, as you know, from all the mailings you get from all kinds of different companies. So they just kind of keep track of people and their birth dates. And as you turn 50 or as about your turn to 50, you'll get your little application in the mail. But as I was saying, they're kind of more diverse. And the reason why a lot of people are staying in the workforce longer, it's kind of twofold. Some people need to financially. And other people, they might want to do something a little bit different with their career. Like instead of maybe a fast-paced job, they're moving into like a slower-paced retail position, or some people just like to work. So we're just seeing a trend that there's more people in the workforce. People are retiring later.
Now, what do you offer to the people who join the AARP?
Well, there's almost like two different divisions. There's our products and services division, which offers a variety of discounts, anything from health insurance to car insurance, as well as things like you can get a discount on your home alarm security system, roadside assistance, those types of programs. And we're able to offer kind of the lower prices to our membership because we have so many people. I mean, nationwide, it's 36 million people.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
That's more than 10% of the country.
Yes.
So this is a group of people who also make up a very significant group of voters and informed voters, people who've been around the block.
Exactly.
Is there organizing around issues that also happens?
Yes, that's kind of the other division, and kind of what we do here in Santa Fe at the Santa Fe office is we do a lot of advocacy work for people 50 plus as well as consumers in general. And we've actually, along those same lines, just kicked off a new campaign at the beginning of the year called Divided We Fail. And it has it's a national campaign, but it also has something we're working on here locally in New Mexico. And that has two prongs to it. One is healthcare reform. The other one is financial security. And the gist of the healthcare reform part is that we need to fix our healthcare system. Our studies have shown that after things like the Iraq War, the most pressing domestic issue is healthcare reform and financial security.
And healthcare reform, especially represented now in Michael Moore's new film.
Exactly. I haven't seen the film, so I don't know like how what his main message is. But I think one of the overall messages is we need to do something.
Do your constituents tend to believe in the single-payer system as opposed to lots of insurance companies?
I don't think we've actually done any polling on that to see like what plan is the most popular. I know in the state of New Mexico, the governor appointed a task force to come up with some recommendations. And those were gone over, I think, about a week ago for over a couple of days. And the single-player plan is one of those, but there's two or three different options. And I think it's too early to tell, like, you know, which one would be best or which one's going to be the front runner.
And which one, I mean, one of the things about this is that often the one that the most people support is not the one that the politicians support.
Exactly. So, I mean, those details are just starting to shake out. So we'll be following that very carefully.
And what kind of complaints do people come to you with, people who seeking health care or anything health care related?
Well, it's very interesting because as part of this campaign, what we're doing is we're gathering people's personal stories. And a lot of what you're hearing is just the frustration of how the system works. Like, there was one gentleman we spoke to down in Roswell who doesn't make enough money to really be able to purchase health care insurance or get insurance through his job, but can't afford it on his own and is being told, you know, his $8.50 an hour job makes him ineligible for a lot of the assistance programs. So there's things like that where the system just isn't working for people. And what we're really trying to advocate at this point is for people to start paying attention to the issue, start becoming aware of what plans are out there, and really kind of holding the lawmakers, particularly as we go to the 2008 election, their feet to the fire and say, we want some viable solutions as to how to go forward and fix this. We need to put the partisanship aside. We need to come together and do something that's really going to be workable and not just throw more money at the system, but really rework it. So we're kind of asking people to keep an eye on that, to vote for the candidates that do come up with viable solutions and basically demand that something be done.
Now, what about Social Security? Is that an issue that comes up among your constituents?
Well, of course, yes. Of course, it's something they're very concerned about. And it was a big issue, of course, when the president was really strongly pushing the privatization of Social Security, which we did not agree with. So we're kind of watching that. We think that'll be another issue. That's kind of under our financial security prong that we'll kind of have to be watching. It hasn't really, since then, really been at the forefront of discussion, but we're hoping that that will change as you know, the elections take place.
Financial security is a big issue for people of all ages, from college students to retired people, because of the issue of credit cards.
Yes.
And actually, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow morning with Representative Tom Udall here on this show, in conjunction with yet another movie that's coming out about this. But do you find that there are people who have gotten to retirement age and their savings have been eaten away, or they have no savings, or they have debt? Is that a problem that comes up?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it specifically like blamed on credit cards, but it's definitely a trend that people are not saving. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They're not saving for emergencies. They're not saving for retirement or doing any kind of retirement planning. And that's another thing that we're really trying to get people to kind of focus on. It's prepare for the future. You know, if you start saving in your 20s, I mean, definitely you'll have something to fall back on in retirement, because it's not, you know, for a lot of people, they're depending on just Social Security when they retire, and that's just not going to, you know, cover all their expenses, and they're being forced to make hard choices between utilities and food and medicines. And so it's a rough position to be in. So the more planning you can do ahead of time and the more savings you can do.
How do you get to the, do you actually work with younger people and encourage them to save, or your members' children?
We're starting to do that. We supported some legislation that created some financial classes in the high school. And I don't have all the details on exactly how that's going to work, but that legislation to get passed so that, you know, your high schoolers have some basic, you know, skills, I guess, when they leave high school as to how to manage their finances, which I think is a start.
We're talking to Beth Velasquez of AARP, which doesn't stand for anything. Identity theft is another issue, and actually,
yes.
Bill Dupuy talked about that this morning on the news. But I imagine that is something that very much affects older people who become more vulnerable as they age.
Yes, I mean, your scam artists seem to pick on the elderly because they're easy targets.
I have to say, on a personal note, a family member of mine has had Alzheimer's disease. And when he was just at that stage of still living at home, still able to function to some extent, he became the victim of so many telephone scams that it was utterly disheartening.
I can imagine, because it's done telemarket-wise, as over the phone, as well as over the internet, and using people's like personal information to steal your identity.
So how do people guard against that, and what are you all doing about it?
Well, the big thing that we did that just got passed during the legislative session is a security freeze. It's one of the first kind of proactive measures that we've seen that really can help prevent identity theft before you're a victim. And the security freeze basically is something that you can put on your credit report that prevents an authorized person from going in there and opening new accounts under your name. And basically, you'd need a PIN or a password to authorize a purchase or an opening of a new account. Like if you wanted to go finance some furniture, you would need to kind of unfreeze your account in order to do that.
So how do people know if their identity has been stolen or if people have been tampering?
And basically what you have to do is kind of do some due diligence. Keep an eye on your credit report. You can go and get a free credit report now under the law, like once a year, and you can visit all three. So what we recommend is like every 3 or 4 months, go into those different credit agencies, like rotate them, so you can kind of keep an eye on what's being charged. Because a lot of times when somebody's a victim of a new account fraud, they don't know it for a month or two. All of a sudden they'll get a statement or something in the bank or a bill in the mail, and they'll be like, what is this? So the more you can kind of keep an eye on things, the better. Check your statements when they come in every month. Just kind of keep an eye on your balances and things.
I actually had something like that happen years ago before I even moved to Santa Fe, about 20 years ago, and I got a notice in the mail saying my loan approval had been denied, and I'd never made a loan request in the first place.
I guess in a way that's kind of lucky. Denied.
Yeah, but they eventually found the people who were doing it, and the woman had a driver's license with my name and information and her photograph on it, and she had 32 different ones of those with her photograph and all these other names on it. And this is the kind of thing that happens probably in different ways now than it happened 10 to 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, now it's much more sophisticated. I mean, they'll dumpster dive, they'll pull mail out of your box. Anytime they can get anything with your name and address on it,
and social security number.
Right. And so we also recommend that anything like that you shred. I mean, purchase a shredder at Walmart or Target. You know, you have to spend a bundle. And just shred that stuff as it comes through so it's not laying around, you know, the dumpster with all that information. Particularly if you get those credit card offers, make sure you're shredding those.
What else does ARP do, and specifically in New Mexico?
In New Mexico, we have a state office here in Santa Fe. We have 5 staff members. And we have probably one of the greatest volunteer forces out of the association. We've got about 120 active volunteers throughout the state that help us kind of carry the message and educate people on some of the things we're talking about. Like this summer, we're going to be doing town halls around the state. We've got one scheduled in Santa Fe on July 31st at the Hilton, I believe. No, Hotel Santa Fe, sorry, from 9:30 to 11, where we're going to be talking about some of these issues, the health care reform proposals that are out there, the security freeze and how you can implement it and protect yourself, and also some of the financial security stuff we've been discussing, like savings, planning for retirement, and why it's so important. And so we'll be doing those. We're going to Las Vegas and Carlsbad. We just did one in Albuquerque. So we've been doing that. It's kind of our off-season work. And then as we get closer to the legislative session, we gear up to do a lot of advocacy work on a variety of bills. I think last year we were following, I'd say, a couple of hundred bills. Not all of them, you know, we were very strongly supporting, but we were keeping an eye on them, watching them go through the process.
And then do you send word to your members that this is a good time to call this and such representative and so on?
Like we actually did that with the security freeze. We, you know, in every kind of communication tool that we use, we were encouraging people that, you know, if you support this idea, please let your legislator know. And so we'll do that kind of mailing and contact and information as well.
I guess ARP must be bigger and stronger ever since the baby boomers have started getting older.
They are starting to, you know, starting to trickle in.
Anything else that you want to let people know before we go?
No, I just, if you want some more information on the security freeze, go to our website, which is www.arp.org/nm. The numbers for all three credit agencies will be under the announcement section and the telephone numbers where you can call to set that up or get more information.
And people of any age are encouraged to do
that. Yes, this one is one of the bills that we worked on that was for all consumers. It is free for people 65 and older and those people who have been victims of identity theft already. If you're below that age group or you haven't been a victim, it's $10 to freeze an account and $5 to unfreeze one. But, I mean, it is $30, which is a lot of money for some people, but it can cost thousands of dollars to get your identity straightened out if somebody should steal it. So it's well worth it.
Have you known people who had that problem, their identity was stolen, and then they're liable for a lot of money?
Most people have been somewhat lucky that they're not liable for the actual charges, but it does cost to, you know, have people work on it to undo it.
So you actually have to hire people to go in there and undo it?
Well, you have to work on it, and it does take time and effort, and it can cost you.
Well, Beth Velasquez, thank you so much for being with us on KSFR.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And it's aarp.org/nm. We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking about the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like to welcome Jackie M. She is Director of Education and Public Programs at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, good morning, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here.
10 years has gone by very quickly. I remember when the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum was a mere idea.
Yes, it has. Well, maybe it has for some, but for us who have been working there, there have been a lot of achievements over the past 10 years that we're very proud of. And, you know, we're looking forward to, of course, the next 10 years and then after that. But I think over the 10 years, the museum certainly has become a landmark in Santa Fe. We're almost at the 2 million visitor mark, and that is a lot of people to come through a museum in a community of this size. Many from here, but of course many from around the world.
That's huge. Let's go back just a moment. How was the idea, how did the idea come about of having something that's actually fairly rare, which is a one-artist museum?
Well, there were many people who, even before O'Keeffe had passed on, thought that her work was such a sizable contribution to American art and art in general that a museum should be made. And sometime at one point there were rumors that maybe one of the National Museums, Smithsonian or something, would create a museum. I remember hearing those rumors living here in Santa Fe. Now, whether or not people at the Smithsonian ever thought about it, that I don't know. But so those rumors were around, but it took approximately, almost 10 years till after O'Keeffe's death for people to come together and find some supporters who would help to create the institution that we have today and to create a not-for-profit organization that would be dedicated to O'Keeffe. And when that planning started, then we looked at it and said, well, let's look at O'Keeffe, but to really show her work, we also have to be able to put her in a context. And that context is American modernism, not only the Stieglitz Circle, but artists that were producing basically 20th century American art. And what were the achievements that were part of O'Keeffe's contributions, but also some of the fellow artists at the time.
And Georgia O'Keeffe, of course, was married to the great photographer and promoter of the arts, Alfred Stieglitz.
Yes, thus the Stieglitz Circle. He had, over the years, there were some select artists that he focused on and saw as maybe worthy of, and if those who know Stieglitz's personality, of promoting, and O'Keeffe being one of them. Interestingly, though, we will have, opening next September, an exhibition called Women of the Stieglitz Circle. Now, most people tend to think only of O'Keeffe, and she is identified with the circle, but there were a number of women that Stieglitz championed and showed at his Gallery 291 and published in Camera Work, and so we'll have a chance to see their work as well.
Who are some of them?
Pamela Coleman Smith was a visual artist. She was seen as somewhat of an eccentric, into almost like fairy nature. She went off to live in England and be in Yeats' circle after her time in the Stieglitz Circle. And some people actually might recognize her most recognizable work for the general maybe not general public, Santa Fe public, is a deck of tarot cards that she actually did.
Right.
And I think it's still published today, but we're not showing those, but we're showing her other work. Annie Brigman was a photographer from the West Coast, and she was one of the sort of pictorialist, soft-focus photographers who worked a lot with nude women imagery, sort of the metaphor of like the female body for life, the tree, for nature, things of that sort. Gertrude Kazabir, that maybe is a more familiar name to some, again, a photographer who worked at the turn of the century, did portrait work, was one of the first to photograph the Native Americans in the Buffalo Bill Cody show, but also probably is most known for some of her works that reflect sort of woman's iconography.
And I so look forward to the day when women and men artists are truly treated equally in the museum setting.
Well, you know, that was certainly O'Keeffe's perspective, that during most of her career she saw that to be identified as a woman artist was actually a sort of pejorative statement. So she preferred to just be called an artist, and Stieglitz fought for that, and even the 40 years she lived after his life, she maintained that, and was one of the things about the feminist movement which rediscovered Georgia O'Keeffe and I think made her more accessible and available to a general public. She still rejected being seen as a leading woman artist. She wanted to be seen as a leading artist.
Exactly.
As, which she was.
We're talking to Jackie M. of the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum. When people come from whatever towns they come from to see the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum, and then suddenly they see there's a Sheeler show, or there's a show of John Marin or Gertrude Kazabir or whatever, do they understand what's going on?
Well, we have really tried to communicate this to our audiences. First of all, we always will have Georgia O'Keeffe on exhibition, and for the most part, it's more works of her art that you could see than in any other place. So, but if the museum isn't filled with Georgia O'Keeffe, it is part of our mission to, as I say, said, show American modernists and to give the public information on this. They may be maybe thinking it would only be Georgia O'Keeffe, but I know Santa Feans really appreciate some of the exhibitions we've had over the years. Edward Weston, the Sheeler show was a particularly special show for those involved and interested in photography. We also have created exhibitions such as Views of the City, which looked at how artists portrayed the city as a metaphor for modernism, and O'Keeffe was certainly represented in that exhibition, but there were many other artists, and it was interesting to see how she represented the city and compare and contrast with others, other American modernists.
And that's also a way of keeping the museum full of fresh ideas and new shows.
Exactly, for reasons for people to be coming back who have been visiting before, to not expect to see a permanent collection on view and the gallery's not changing, but to have life, and for us, and even in terms of my work, to be able to expand on the programming that we do.
Now, the 10th anniversary is coming up, or is here.
Yes.
And the day after tomorrow, Saturday, there's a big celebration downtown on the plaza in the museum.
Yes. We wanted to do something for the community in general, and also, of course, at this time of the year, our visitors to Santa Fe. So what greater place than to host it on the plaza? And Mayor Koss and his wife, Carol Rose, are our co-chairs of this event. And you, Mary Charlotte, are one of our MCs for the program that will be going on at the plaza. We have a full schedule from 10 to 5 of wonderful musicians, dancers, performers. And then we have also some hands-on art making and refreshments for the public. And at the museum, we're offering free admission. And we also have some performers who will be in the courtyard as well. So we hope people can come by and really celebrate with us the museum's 10th anniversary in this free for everyone activities. And then we, of course, have other events that will be happening later in the summer in August. Would you like to know about some of those?
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, we have the letter reading. It's called O'Keeffe Speaking with Friends and Lovers, a reading of O'Keeffe's letters.
And she wrote some serious heavy-duty love letters. I have read them.
Well, You probably have read some, but I'm not
sure. I was at the Beinecke Library Yale reading the originals. It was unbelievable.
Okay, the Beinecke does hold those letters, and most of them had been sequestered from the public to view until last year in March was the 20th anniversary of her death. And, of course, that oftentimes happens that after a person's death, they wait a number of years so that
anybody who knew
it,
exactly.
Yes.
So, a little scary, ladies and gentlemen. If you're a famous person, destroy it all now, unless you want it to be known by future generations.
Well, it's good for historians. Yeah. Let's put it that way. So we also will have, I think, Sam Westerman from the television show Law and Order. I'm sorry. I hope I haven't.
Oh, Sam Watterson.
Watterson, sorry.
That's one of the few TV shows I watch. He's a great actor.
Good. Yes, that's what I've heard. I'm not a TV watcher, but when I have said the name correctly, people get very excited that he'll be coming. And
When will he be here?
They will be reading the letters on August 23rd. And for people who are interested, there are still tickets available. And they are. You can contact the Lenzik box office, either using their website or calling 988-1234 to reserve a seat. And we hope you can join us for that presentation. It'll be at 7 o'clock, August 23rd. And many of these letters have not been in any books or published before. And I think it'll be a rich experience and something that very unique to Santa Fe.
So Sam Watterson will be reading Georgia O'Keeffe's letters aloud?
He will probably play the role of Stieglitz
okay.
in her male parts. And Joan Allen, the actress Joan Allen, will be doing Georgia O'Keeffe.
Very interesting.
And there may be a few other readers, of course, in there to represent different personalities and individuals in O'Keeffe's life.
And they were really free spirits with a tremendous amount of eros energy going. I mean, this would be very interesting. So what else is happening at the museum?
Well, you know, I just had a comment on that. Of course, we have to look at the time. This was part of a movement that it actually had, you know, Freudian relationships that Stieglitz saw how women painted and women created art from a different place. He espoused that, and he certainly pushed that with O'Keeffe, maybe more than she would have liked in terms of interpretation of her work.
Yeah, she may not have thought that it came
yes.
from a different place.
But, you know, they were free spirits in general, and it was a new movement of the time. I mean, even to never have taken his name when she married him was something of a strange oddity. But as many artists do, they sort of predict where our culture is going to go, and that is not and no longer an uncommon thing to maintain your own name and presence in the world, especially for professional women. Other events that are going to happen are I'm very excited to say we have a Woman of Distinction lecture with the Honorable Ruth Bader Ginsburg being in conversation with Roberta Cooper-Ramo, the first woman to be elected president of the American Bar Association. That'll be at the Lenzik. We have sold out the tickets on that. We're checking to see if we might be able to do something either in the lobby or on the radio for people to hear, because we know people will be very interested. And, of course, the Supreme Court has been on the front page lately quite a bit, the 5-4 dilemma.
Indeed.
We also have a wonderful anniversary celebration in honor. It's a festive dinner dancer in honor of the patrons who have helped make this museum possible, and those are Anne and John Marion. And that will be on Saturday evening, August 25th. And tickets for that event and also a private event up at the Abiquiu home of O'Keeffe can be, you can find information on those by calling the museum's development office, 946-1033. And on Sunday, August 26th, we close with a 10th anniversary finale of Diana Krall in concert. She's a jazz vocalist, and that will be at the opera. Of course, the opera season ends the night before, and so we're able to have the opera host this event, and we're very grateful for that. Tickets are almost sold out, so if you're interested in this, you need to call the opera box office at 986-5900. Or if you're out of town, 800-280-4654. You just call the regular box office, same place you would be getting your opera tickets, and you can buy tickets for the crawl. But I do want to tell people that the tickets are almost sold out for that.
So a great deal. And there's also an exhibition currently at the museum. We don't want to forget about that.
No, we don't. And, of course, as I said, on Saturday it'll be free admittance to the museum. But, of course, the museum is always free on Friday evenings. We're open from 5 to 8 p.m. Free to the public. We're open all day. And in the summers, we're open every day of the week. And we also give a special discount to New Mexicans. It's only $4, whereas others pay $8 to get admission. The exhibition that's up is called Circling Around Abstraction, and it is an exhibition that particularly looks at how O'Keeffe incorporates these ideas of abstraction into her work, even her work that would be more representational in subject matter, and how the motif of the circle and the spiral seems to be a visual language or vocabulary that she resorts to again and again in various variations in various forms. And it's the first time anyone has really looked into this kind of approach or sort of classified O'Keeffe's work in this way. So it's a rather interesting opportunity to see that. But even if you're not into sort of visual theory and just want to enjoy the O'Keeffe's work, the exhibition has a number of pieces on loan to us that are quite well-known works by O'Keeffe and haven't been seen or shown here in Santa Fe before and will be exciting for people to see who love O'Keeffe's work.
Now, this is something that that's inevitable, which is that so many other museums own Georgia O'Keeffe and collections own Georgia O'Keeffe that the O'Keeffe Museum has to borrow them from elsewhere.
We do, but also, you know, I should say that over the 10 years that we've been in existence, the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum has put together exhibitions that have traveled not only around the United States, but into Europe as well and other parts of the world. And it's been very exciting for us. And, of course, as a young institution, we had to prove ourselves very quickly to be worthy to borrow these important and expensive works and then to be able to show them and travel them in exhibitions. It's a lot. Those of people who know the behind-the-scenes work in a museum, it's a lot to put an exhibition together and mount it in your own institution, but much, much more work to travel it. And
just handling, shipping, and insuring expensive works of art is an industry of its own.
Oh, sure. I mean, sometimes, you know, you have a courier who comes on a plane with a painting seated beside them. I also want to mention that on exhibit, and this has been of interest to a number of people, is a small photographic exhibition by Tony Vaccaro called Georgia O'Keeffe Illuminated. And Vaccaro was a photographer for Life magazine and Look magazine as documentary photographer. And he went out in 1960 to on an assignment to photograph O'Keeffe. And she was a bit reluctant to be photographed by him. She had first told the magazine that she would be available if they sent either Todd Webb, Avedon, or Ansel Adams, three photographers that she knew and liked. And here they sent this young Tony Vaccaro. But the pictures are, they became friendly over the course of the weekend, and there's an intimacy in terms of, you know, showing her everyday life. There are also some portraits by Alfred Stieglitz in one of the galleries of O'Keeffe. So you have a chance to see O'Keeffe work and O'Keeffe herself on exhibit at the museum.
And the 10th anniversary is this Saturday on the plaza. What time does it start? What's the first time people get there?
Well, it's 10 to 5. The music starts 10 to 5, and we have groups like Manzanares playing from noon to 2. We have Trillium Marimba Ensemble, Maria Benitez Next Generation, the National Dance Institute performing. Sister Mary and the Bad Habits close while you're on as MC. We'll be honoring docents who have served for 10 years at the museum. And I just want to mention quickly, we have a couple other programs coming up in July.
And you can find out about those at O'KeefeMuseum.org because we are out of time.
Okay.
Jackie M., thanks so much for being with us.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org, and we are podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. Thanks to Brian Highhill for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan. Features Women in Jazz, A Day Late, and a beautiful new CD by flutist Dottie Anita Taylor. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll be talking about a new film called Maxed Out, and we'll be talking to Representative Tom Udall about some of the laws that are going on around debt and related issues. And, of course, the inimitable Robert Knott. All that and much, much more on Santa Fe's only public radio station, KSFR. Hasta la vista. Ciao.